So today is February 14th, the 9th of Adar, Adar Aleph, and we are going to finish Perek Yod Aleph today. So we're sort of dividing this Perek into three sections. The first Perek was David's quote-unquote sin with Bathsheba, and the second topic was David's quote-unquote sin with the assisted murder of Uriah. And this third topic is going to continue on the story of Uriah. We're going to see how Uriah actually died, but it's also going to foray into Emunah in a very interesting way. So again, we're doing the Malvim. I tried to cut out some Malvims. I did cut out a little bit, but it's just too important. So, okay. So just to sum up, even though we're not happy with it, I'm hoping by the end of this perek, you will be happier with the Malvim. But it's okay if you're not, because the next perek, we're going to get into Natan, the Navi, confronting David with what he did, and David saying Chatati, and we are going to talk about David's tshuva. But we can't do that until we get to the next perek, which we might get to today. Okay, so in any case, Bathsheba, and again, this is the Malvim defending David against the Abarbanel, who are, they're 400 years apart. But so the Abarbanel says everything we're all thinking just by reading the simple text, okay? But as we've kind of seen, the simple text isn't so simple. And we're especially going to see that at the end of this parak with the last pasuk. Why isn't it so simple? Because if it really were a matter of David having an adulterous affair with a woman, halachically, they would not be allowed to stay together, and all the more so, the child of this illegal union to become the next king, anointed by, the next hereditary king to lead Am Yisrael, it really couldn't happen. You can't even make those kinds of exceptions for the king. So we had to spend a lot of time in seeing how could this actually have been a halachic relationship, where we said that retroactively, Bathsheba was a divorced woman. Okay? Uriah also, it's a real problem, David's plan to have him killed in the way he's having him killed. It's not an attribute that we want in a leader of ours. Okay? So now we're going to see what actually happened, and it's really interesting. So I'm starting with Pasuk Yod Dalet, which we read last week, but we need to really compare what David says should happen versus what actually happened, and this will show us a little bit about the workings of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world. Not that we'll know anything. Okay, so Vayhi b'boker v'yichtov David sefer el Yoav. And it was in the morning after Uriah refused to leave and go to his wife to have relations so that somehow the Malvim explains that David would let this child know that he was the son of the king so that he wouldn't marry any of the siblings of the king, but it would all be hidden. That's what David wanted to happen. Uriah refused. In his refusal, we saw the Malvim point out several points that this could actually be considered a rebellion against the king, which warranted death. We still have to deal with the fact that David's having him killed in this underhanded way, and not through the court system. It is his prerogative as the king, but it's not, again, it's not the qualities we want in our king. So, Vayishlach biyad Uriah. So he sends this letter in the hand of Uriah, probably sealed. Vayichtov v'sefer lemor. So what was written? Havu et Uriah el mul pnei hamilchama hachazaka. Place Uriah right in the front of the strongest part of the war. And then it says, Vishavtem me'acharav v'nika v'meit. Then once he's placed in the front of the battle, the battlefront of the strongest part of the war, then everyone should leave. Don't work to save him, don't work to protect him. Leave so that he'll be killed. Okay, so now let's see what actually happened. Vayhi bishmor Yoav el ha'ir. And so it was that Yoav was keeping watch on the city, and the city, if you won't remember, it's from the beginning of the Perek, which we started however many weeks ago, is called Rabbah. That's where they're fighting. So Yoav was guarding the city. Vayiten et Uriah el hamakom asher yada ki anshei chayel sham. So Yoav placed Uriah to the place where he knew that there were very brave, hard-fighting soldiers there. Okay? Vayetzu anshei ha'ir. So now the people of the city of Rabbah that they've besieged came out. Vayilachamu et Yoav. And they waged war with Yoav. Vayipol min ha'am me'avdei David. And people from the servants of David fell in this battle. Vayamot gam Uriah hachiti. And Uriah the Hittite also died. Okay? So remember what David requested to be done, that they'd place Uriah and then everyone would kind of, it seems almost like all the other soldiers would run away, like they wouldn't be protected, and Uriah would be killed and nobody else would die. But what happened here? There was a battle and several soldiers fell along with Uriah. Okay? So now you can sort of predict on a very human level what's going to go on here. How does Yoav feel? Does he feel he succeeded or does he feel he failed in his mission? You know? So that's going to be a touch. But let's just read what the Malbim has to say. So if you go to page 2, just on these two psukim, so 16 and 17. So Pasuk Tetzain, Vehi Bishmor Yoav El Ha'ir. So it was when Yoav was guarding the city. Ulam Nistovev Hadavar She'uriah Nehareg Me'atzmo B'derech Melchama. So the Malbim, if you remember, I should have said this before, the Malbim is focusing in on what was David's sin. If it wasn't an adulterous affair, if it wasn't manslaughter of Uriah, what was it? The Malbim claims that David's sin was thinking that he could control everything, thinking that he could get Uriah to sleep with his wife and that then he could have Uriah killed. Okay? So the Malbim's continuing this line of thinking of that being the sin of David, and he's saying the things evolved that Uriah was killed of his own accord in the natural way of war. So while David's creating all of these, the word in Hebrew is tachbolot, I always lose it in English, but like plan,
scenarios.
Yeah, but more conniving, like conniving plans in a negative sense, more than scenarios, it just happens naturally. Okay? Ki bishmor Yoav al ha'ir, kederach hamatzor, sheshamrim al ha'ir saviv. So it was when Yoav was guarding the city, as is the way when you have a sage, a
Everyone
sage
goes
sage.
To the science lab downstairs. You will be told which science lab you're in based on your grade. Please go downstairs to the science lab.
Okay. So as is the way of people who guard a city surrounding it, v'derechu she'an she'ha'ir yotz'im kepam bepam v'horgim v'chel ha'tzarim. And in that way of besieging a city, the people in the city will try to come out and attack the soldiers who are surrounding them and even kill them. Ubimakom sheyesh giborim mibifnim mamidim sham giborim bachutz. And just like you have heroic soldiers within, you also have heroic soldiers without. Visamet Uriah bimakom sheyada she'an chayal sham bifnim. And he placed Uriah in the internal line of attacking for the army. Vigam ze haya biderech milchama. So you see how many times the Malbim has said this phrase, "Bederech milchama." This was also just the way of war. Ki Uriah haya ben hashloshim v'sheva giborim asher leDavid. Uriah was one of these 37 mint soldiers that David had, and there is nothing unusual with placing him in this internal line of attack. And there's nothing unusual about people from the city coming out and attacking those soldiers. And there's nothing unusual about the people in the city.
Green team, right now we are having academic challenges downstairs in the labs. Green team, we need every single one of you who's not working on the hallway to please come to the academic challenge. We gotta win this. We're really close. Let's get this done.
So the good thing about Color War is it only happens once a year. So you know it's never going to happen again this year. Okay, so the Malbim is stressing that none of David's tachbolot, none of his conniving ploys had to be used. It just happened derech hamilchama, the natural way of war. Okay, Yud Zayin in the Malbim. Vayitzu Anshei Ha'ir Kedarkam. The people of the city that were being besieged came out as was their way, pam b'pam, occasionally. Vayipol min ha'am me'avdei David. And there fell people from the servants of David. Ratzalomar min ha'giborim u'binehem gam Uriah nafal. So from these heroes, these great soldiers, and among them was Uriah also, nafal she David, be'ofen shemeit ma'atzmo b'derech milchama. Meaning he just died as the natural course of the war. Okay, do you see where the Malbim's going and how he's stressing this? Meaning the Malbim, according to him, maybe not according to all of us, he cleared David's name of adultery. He cleared David's name of manslaughter because Uriah was killed naturally, Bathsheba was retroactively divorced, and David's main sin is having all these conniving plans. Okay? Okay, so let's, any questions? Let's continue.
So, but David's order to Yoav was to put him in the front and then pull back all the soldiers around him?
Something like that.
Yeah. Which he didn't do.
Right, he didn't do. Because what happened? The natural course of war. Yoav didn't have a chance. There was nothing to connive about.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're back into the text. Pasuk Yud Chet. Vayishlach Yoav, if you remember, I bolded all the shlichuts here, all the sendings here. So Vayishlach Yoav, Vayaged le David et kol divrei hamilchama. So he sent a messenger to David for all the things that happened in the war. Vayitzav et hamalach, and he commanded the malach. Again, we've had this word a few times, but messenger here. Lemor saying, Kichalotcha et kol divrei hamilchama le daber el hamalach. When you finish, if you know that word, that we say at Kiddush, God completed, he finished. That's it, speaking of Baal Teshuva. That's actually how you, sometimes you know if someone's a Baal Teshuva when they're saying Kiddush, and instead of saying Vayichal, they say Vayichol, because they think Kaf Lamed is always Kol, but here it's the verb and it's actually Vayichal. You know what I'm saying, right? Okay. Okay. V'haya im ta'aleh chamat ha'melech, and if the king gets angry, right? So this is Yoav's insecurity that it didn't go as the king had planned it to go. So if the king gets angry, v'amar lecha madua negashtem el ha'ir lehilachim, why did you get so close to the city to wage war? Halo yadatem et asher yaru me'al ha'choma. You know that they can shoot down from the wall of the city. Kaf Aleph, Mihika Davimelch ben Yerubeshet, Halo Isha, Hishlicha Lav Pelech Rechev Me'al Hachoma, Vayamat Vitevich, Lama Nigad Shem El Hachoma, Vamarta, Lama Nigad Shem El Hachoma. Okay, so who killed Avimelch, the son of Yerubeshet? I have a little paragraph and I'll explain to you who he was if you don't know. Behold, a woman sent down from the wall this piece of a millstone, so like a flour mill, if you've ever been to Israel and you've seen the archaeological sites, and they would grind the flour with these huge stones. So she threw down the upper millstone onto Avimelech, and he died in Tevetz. Why would you approach the wall? Ve'amarta, and then you should say to him, Gam avdecha Uriah hachiti meit. Also, your servant Uriah died. Okay? So now the Malbim brings up a question, doesn't actually say the question, but he answers this question. Isn't this a little suspect? Like, you see the king angry, and then the messenger would say, oh, but Uriah also died, and then suddenly the king would be happy? Wouldn't that put into the messenger's mind that there was some sort of planning, conniving going on here? Okay, so let's read who Avimelech was, and then we'll read the Malbim has to say. So you'll find the paragraph of Avimelech on the top of page 3. This is from the Jewish Encyclopedia. So the son of Gidon, who's one of the main Shoftim, he's a very famous Shoftim. It actually has a lot longer spoken about him in Shoftim than others, and this story all takes place in Perek Tet, chapter 9. And he's also named Yerubbaal, the great judge of Israel. By virtue of his father's dictatorship, or semi-royalty, they wanted to make Gidon a king. He claimed to rule over Ephraim. He was, however, merely the son of Gidon's concubine, and to make good his claim, he resorted to force. Aided by his mother's relatives, he put to death all of his half-brothers, I think it was like 70, men or something, except the youngest, Yotam, and ruled 3 years in Shechem. His adherents were mostly of the old Kenitish race, to which his mother probably belonged, the concubine. The Israelitish party rebelled and gained control in Shechem. After prolonged strife, Avimelech took the city by assault. While besieging the neighboring stronghold, Tebetz, he was struck on the head with a millstone thrown by a woman. Conscious that he was mortally wounded, he commanded his armor-bearer to kill him at once with his sword. As a result of his death, Shechem and its environs were made permanently Israelitish. This is from the year 1904, this Jewish encyclopedia, so hence the odd language. Okay, so that's who Avimelech is. So you have this warning in Shoftim of never to get too close to the walls of a besieged city, then even the women can kill you. And that's, if you read the story, I think that's actually why he has his armor person kill him, so that nobody would say he was killed by a woman. So that's the story. Okay, so now let's read the Mabim on these Sukkim. So we got through Kaf Aleph. Okay, so Yotet and Kaf. Vayitzav et ha-ma'ach le'mor. So he commanded the messenger, saying, Amar le, im yigmor ha-sipor she'az yiktsof ha-melech, lama kervu el-choma. So if you finish the story and the king gets angry, why you got close to the wall? V'yesh b'zeh shnei taromiyot. And there would be two reasons why he would get angry about this. He would have two complaints. Ki derech ha-matzor la'amod rachok min ha'ir, merchak rav, ad im yiplu aleihem min ha'ir v'yerdufu achareihem yishmeru et atzmo bal yigiyu karov ligvul ha'iria. So in any time you're besieging a city, am I saying it right? Besieging or besieging? Besieging. Right, okay, yeah. Good. Okay, so anytime you besiege a city, you always stay a distance from the city itself, a great distance, it says, because if they're going to throw things at them or they're going to chase after them, they'll be able to guard themselves and they won't be able to approach them, and nothing that they would shoot out would hit them. Ki kamol mil min ha'ir. They would stand around a mile, a Roman mile. Well, I don't know what kind of mile the Malbim would be referring to. So a mile from the city. Yochlu hamorim lirot min hachoma b'chitzim v'totach v'magiim b'gvul hahu yashchitu ba hayotzim. So if you're within a distance of a mile, whatever that meant to the Malbim, then the shooters can shoot from the wall with arrows and with cannons, we'll just say, and it would reach this border, and then the people would be destroyed, because if they would come out with a sword, and because those who would come out with the sword could reach them, so everything would be able to reach the soldiers who were besieging the city from at a certain distance. So even if you get within this distance of being able to be shot at, there's still a further distance of reaching the wall itself where people can throw things at you.
How do you besiege a city if you're beyond the ability to shoot
because,
and you can't shoot back?
Well, think of Yerushalayim, what happened with Chizkiyahu's tunnel, right? The only way they were able to survive is they had the water source. So in ancient times, if it's a walled city, nothing can go in or out. Right? So you either wait for them all to die of starvation or they surrender. Right?
Yeah.
Think of Masada. Yeah. You know? Okay. And that's why in the Second Temple, when the Romans had besieged the city, right? And the zealots burnt down the grain storehouses that could have kept everyone alive for years. Like, that was the issue. That's why they had to lose, because there was no other way. Okay. She'az yashlichu aleihem avanim, right? Because by the wall itself they can send stones down. Shezot yasu gam hanashim hayomdim mima'al. Because even the women who are standing there from above can do that. Kemo she'aya b'Avimelech. Like it was with Avimelech. V'ze she'katuv David yitra'em b'shtayim. And this is why it's written. He could have two complaints about this. Aleph. Madua nigashtem al ha'ir lehilachem. Why did you go close to the city to wage war? Hu al shenikshu livul ha'yiriya lehilachem sham im hayotzim. That's they came within the boundaries of where the shooters could shoot their arrows. You knew that they could have shot you from the wall. The soldiers all know exactly how close or how far they can be with regard to the arrows. And you need to guard yourself from that place. And he, so the Ma'avim, because he loves language, is saying, and that's why the word madua is used, because this is asking for a reason of why you did it. Kaf aleph bet, ve'amarta gam avdecha Uriah chiti meit. Then you should say that Uriah the Hittite mate. Oh, I think I skipped the actual second reason why David would get angry, but we're not focusing on that. Okay, so then after you tell him what happened to the war, if he gets angry, then you should tell him that Uriah died. Hum ma'amar bal shtei panim. Malvim saying there are two facets to this. By the way, panim, faces, facets, same word in English also. Hamalach hevin sheyashiv lo ki lo yad Yoav haya b'ma'al ki Uriah shehu min hagiburim mari nefesh cheref nasho lamut kedarko ve'acharav nimshechu am. So by mentioning Uriah, the messenger would understand that Yoav is not trying to give David a secret message. Rather, David's trying to save his own behind because Uriah was known as this hot-tempered soldier that would do anything to win the war, even put his life in mortal danger. And it was because Uriah was overzealous in waging this battle that all the others who also died followed after him. So it's working in, like, David needed to do nothing. This was Uriah's personality, as we saw when he refused to go home to his wife. He wanted to be in the front lines. He wanted to win this battle. He wanted to wage war. Everything that was all a part of Uriah's natural personality would lead him to this situation. And not only that, but we can even put the manslaughter accusation on Uriah for being irresponsible in running up to the wall and getting other soldiers who would follow him killed also. You see how he just completely turned that on his head. And that's what the messenger would think in relaying this message to David. And the Malvim is pointing out that Yoav and David were both comfortable enough with Uriah's reputation that that giving the messenger this message to relay would place zero suspicion on David or Yoav in deciding to do this. Okay, so we believe Yoav, but what's going on in the heart of Yoav? That in telling him this, that Uriah was one of those killed, Yoav would be relaying to the king that he had fulfilled his mission in getting Uriah killed. So these two facets are going on at the same time with this statement. Okay, back to our text. So we are now on Kaf Bet. Vayelach ha-ma'alach. So the Malach went, Vayavo, and he came, Vayaged le-David, and he told to David et kol asher shalacho Yoav, everything that Yoav sent him to do. Vayomer ha-malach el David. What did the Malach say to David? Are you here for Karen's class? Are you here for Karen's class?
I'm here for yours too.
Oh, okay. So you can. Okay, so there's a seat over there. How are you?
I'm fine.
Welcome.
I just discovered I'm bleeding, but
I'm
not
sorry.
Worried about it. I just didn't want to make sure I don't drip on anything.
Okay. So we actually start at 10:30.
Yes.
So just okay. So you're
okay.
Fine. But you're fine.
Oh,
okay.
You.
So you'll get the end.
Thank you.
Okay. So now if you pay attention, Deborah, you want to share with me?
Yeah.
And we'll give her so you can see the source. You can read in English what we've read in the pack. Okay, so here, you can sit next to Deborah, actually. We'll put these down. Yeah. Okay. No problem. Okay, so the Malach then tells David everything that you have told him to. And David, the Malach says to David, Ki gavru aleinu ha'anashim. So we get a little more details of what happened in this war, in this battle. So the people became strong upon them, and they actually went out to have a battle on a field. And we came. They came up as far as the opening of the gate to the city. So meaning they because they were waging this actual battle on the fields, and they had to get them back into their walled city. So they came up till the gate of the city. So you can see even more how natural this is. How they didn't need to find any trick to have Uriah killed. Kaf Dalet Vayoru Hamorim El Vadecha Me'al Hachoma. So the shooter shot at your servants from the wall, and some of the king's servants died, and also your servant Uriah the Hittite is dead. So again, in terms of following instructions, the messenger actually didn't follow Yoav's instruction. The messenger just blurted everything all out at once, which also tells you how innocent he was and how he didn't suspect anything of the specific role to say that Uriah specifically had died. Okay, so how does David respond? He gets to respond as the benevolent king. Oh, actually, let's read the Malbim on that. Oh, I don't think I have a Malbim on that. Yeah. Okay. Okay, so let's see how David responds. Vayomer David el hamalach. David says to the messenger, Ko tomar el Yoav. This is what you should say to Yoav. Al yera be'enecha et hadavar hazeh. Let not this thing be evil in your eyes. Okay, you'll see I underlined al yera. You can see there's another vayera later. That'll be very meaningful. Ki kazeh v'kazeh tochal hacherav hachazek milchamatcha el ha'ir v'harsa v'chazkehu. So why is he so benevolent? This is what you should say to Yoav. Don't let this displease you, for the sword devours many times this number. Strengthen your battle against the city, destroy it, and encourage him. So David is saying, what amazing, brave men you all are for fighting. This is just what happens in war, and it could have been even worse. The sword devours many more than this. It could have been so much worse. You did a great job. Kafav vatishma eshet Uriah. The wife of Uriah heard. Okay, now this is going to sound even more... again, I lost the word, making David sound like a criminal, criminalizing of David, because in terms of both the adultery and the manslaughter, the wife of Uriah heard, ki met Uriah isha, that Uriah, her husband, had heard. Just note for a moment, just in terms of spelling, I find this interesting. So isha is always spelled aleph shin hey, okay? I actually had a debate with my son about this because I read some of this, these notes he was taking about how he should spell, and he felt like he was being more clear by spelling woman aleph yud shin hey. But if you pay attention, woman is always spelled aleph shin hey, because what is aleph yud shin hey? Her husband, ish shelah. Okay, that dot in the middle means feminine possessive, her husband. So ish is spelled aleph yud shin, and isha is spelled aleph shin hey. If you're ever at a Sheva Brachot, this is a much-used Dvar Torah. Does anybody know what I'm about to say? So, Ish and Isha have the same two letters, Aleph Shin, which spells Ish, fire, because without Hashem, the Yud and the He, you only have fire left. You have to add Hashem into the relationship in order to get Ish and Isha. Okay? It's a very nice thing to say at Sheva Brachot. Okay. So her husband, so we had it twice, Eshet Uriah, Isha. If you're reading this like a very good Torah reader, we'll read it, Isha, like pronouncing the hey. It's called a ma'pik hey. But tispod al ba'ala, and she did the eulogy for her husband. Okay, this is actually kind of a controversy in Israel today. How do we refer to our husbands in Hebrew? Because what does Baal mean? Baal means owner. And it also, not in addition to meaning owner, it comes from the maybe crass, maybe purely scientific Hebrew verb leave all, which means to have relations. So your Baal is the one who is Boel, you. And that, it's very crass. I'm keeping that in Hebrew, if that's okay. Okay? So that is what a Baal is. And in Isha, and is her man, basically. So a lot of people in Israel, even modern Orthodox people, are trying to shift the language that instead of saying Ba'ali, my husband, that we say Ishi, my man, it puts it on a more egalitarian playing field a little bit. And the Malbim is actually going to kind of address that. Okay. We'll save the last pasuk for the end, so let's go into the Malbim. So page 2, we're in Kaf Vav. Vetishma. Let's see what that was referring to. So this is when Batsheva hears, Vatishma. No, that's okay. Hagam ha'ashma ha'chamishit shehigdil ha'mahari. So he's referring back to the Abarbanel. And the Abarbanel had 5 complaints on David of how he sinned. And the Abarbanel, again, did not try to justify it in any way. So the 5th complaint was that, animalistic desires, he immediately married Batsheva as if he couldn't control his desires. He needed to marry her immediately. So that's what the Abarbanel's complaint was. So Masha meher David lakachat et isha, that he took the her as a wife so quickly. Tarbela borit shaya muchrach leze lehastir hadavar shel haharam. So the Malbim is defending David as he did before, which we weren't so comfortable with, which is totally understandable, that he had to hide the whole pregnancy thing. Meaning, this is all a matter of maybe a few weeks. I don't know how long this all took. But if David then immediately married Batsheva after the Shiva, then the pregnancy could still be attributed to David in post-marriage relations, as opposed to any affair or even to Uriah, because everyone witnessed that when David had Uriah brought down, he never left the palace, so nobody would suspect that Uriah could have been the father through that. Okay, v'gam b'katuv hazeh yirmoz ki megereshet hayta me'Uriah, and the Malbim's claiming that this pasuk also hints to the fact that Batsheva was actually divorced from Uriah. So I think what he's saying here is that it wasn't a contingent divorce. If I don't come from the battle, consider yourself retroactively divorced from the time I left, but an actual pre-battle divorce. Okay? That's what the Malbim's claiming here, and we're going to see, he's going to explain. B'masha katav, sheshama shemet isha vatispod el ba'ala. So this pasuk, that she heard that her man died, and she eulogized her husband. Okay, so the shift in language over what he was. Ki yesh havdel ben shem ish ubein shem ba'al. Because there's a difference between the name ish and the name ba'al. Shem ish hu mitzad hachiba shebein ish l'ishto. The name ish comes from that aspect of love that's between a husband and wife. V'shem ba'al hu rak mitzad sheba'al ota. And the name Ba'al is just from that aspect that he has relations with her, o mitzad ha'adnut, o from the aspect that he has control over her. Ve'al kein, kishemidaberet ba'ada, ba tamid kinui ishi, lo kinui ba'ala. So when you're speaking, I'm not sure exactly, when she's speaking about him, it will always come up this expression of my man, and not the expression of my owner, my husband. Even though that is how modern Hebrew would disagree with the Malbim. But he's actually right, of course. Ve'amar, and we even have a pasuk in Hosea, tikri'i ishi v'lo tikri'i li od bali. Call me your man and don't call me your husband. Ki kri'at shem ishi mora shechibato aleha. Because the use of the word ish instructs of the love. V'hashmua ba'a shemet isha. And this news comes that her isha, her ish, died, because that's what the nation would have thought. The nation, Malbim had said before that they did divorce, and they did it privately. Nobody knew. It wasn't a public divorce. So the whole nation would see it as her ish that died. Aval hi safta al ba'ala. But she eulogized her ba'al. Lo al isha, not her ish, ki kvar hayta migoreshet, because she was already divorced. So the Malbim is claiming that this strange use of these 2 different words for husband is showing that from Batsheva's perspective, There was no love. They were divorced. To her, it was simply a Baal, somebody with whom she had relations. Had she still had feelings for him, had they still been married, it would have been her Ish. Okay? And so the language itself speaks to that.
The problem is the Pasuk twice calls them an Ish.
Right. So the Malvin is complaining it's not complaining. The Malvin is explaining that that's from the perspective of the Am, that everyone heard this news and they assumed that he was still her husband. But we know, based on the Malbim's careful reading, that they were already divorced and there had been no adulterous sin.
Except the Pasuk starts with Tishma.
Yeah, that's true. Well, she heard maybe along with everybody else. Yeah. You could say. No, you're right. There are some problems with it. Okay, so now the last Pasuk. And then, Vayavor Ha'evel. So the period of mourning ended. Again, I thought of this morning. What's the mourning period? 7 days, right? When you're in Avelut. And it was 7 days, the opposite, for Yaakov to have the 7 days of the wedding before he could marry Rachel. So this is the 7 days of mourning before Bathsheba could move on to her second husband, David. Okay? So, Vayavor Ha'evel, the Avelut passed, Vayishlach David, and David sent, Vayasfa el beto, and she was collected into his house. Vatihi lo leisha, and she became his wife. Vatele lo ben, and she had a son. And now you would expect, if you were an English editor, that that would be enough of a sentence, and we would have a period, and we would have a new pasuk. But we do not. And what's the end of the pasuk before we get to the end of this section? Vayera hadavar asher asa David be'enei Hashem. And this thing was bad, which David did in the eyes of Hashem. And just remember David's language before. Oh, what you did in battle wasn't bad, right? Al yera, don't think it's bad. Here, it is bad. What David did is bad, okay? So now the Malbim is going to explain to us exactly what that means. So Kaf Zayin, V'saper ki ba'avur ha'evel asfa David et beto. So it tells us that that the Avelis had passed and David collected her into his house. V'haya nidme kichonen eshet ha'gibor hanispa b'melchama. So what would this appear to the public? This would just appear like the king having mercy on the wife of the hero that he then gathers into his house to give her some kavod and to comfort her. Vayidekach, and by way of this, vatihi lalisha. And that's how he fell in love with her, kemotzeitchin, because once she was in his house, she found favor in his eyes, this poor widow, this poor attractive widow. Vateled lo ben, and she gave birth to a son, beofen sheya nir'eh shenit abra ata, in a way that it could seem that she became pregnant right then. I just have to say personally, I have 5 boys. My earliest baby that was born was 8 days late. Okay? as my aunt who also always went late, 2 of my boys were a full 2 weeks late. Every womb is like an oven. You know what your own oven has to, the time it needs to stay in there to cook. It's all different. So this was totally plausible for Bathsheba to have been pregnant that long from the previous relation. And it appear a normal pregnancy from this point on.
Except the halacha is she's not supposed to remarry for 3 months.
So, right, so we actually figured that out. The Malvim figured that out for us because everyone knew that when they brought Uriah back, he didn't go to visit his wife, and that when he had initially left for battle was over 3 months from the time that he died. Okay? But you're absolutely right, and the Malvim was well aware of that and solved it for us in his way. Okay. Thank you for reiterating that. Okay, Vayira hadavar asher asa David b'enei Hashem. So this thing was evil in the eyes of Hashem, what David had done. Be'emet lo yada ish b'davar, rak Hashem hayodea ta'alumot. So the Malvin is focusing on something we may not have caught on to here. That not that it was evil to Hashem, but that it was only in the eyes of Hashem, because Hashem was the only one who knew. Hashem, the knower of the hidden, was the only one who knew the full facts and circumstances around these events. The people didn't know. V'hagam shelo chet, And also that David did not sin, lo be'eshet ish, he did not have an adulterous affair because she was divorced, ve'lo be'mitat Uriah, and not in the assisting the death of Uriah, kanichtav le'el, because Uriah died in the natural way of war, be'kolze, in any case, ra hadavar mitzad she'asa David, Mashiach Elokei Yaakov, this is all evil from the aspect that David did this as the anointed one of the God of Yaakov. V'hagam shelo haya ne'anash al ze b'dinei adam. And also, he was not punished with this by human court. Ra hadavar b'enei Hashem, ki lakcha derech gazel. This was evil in the eyes of Hashem because he took by way of stealing. U'kumo shibi'er b'siman haba. Like will be explained in the next section, and this of course is the famous message of Natan the prophet of the rich man stealing the one and only sheep from the poor man. Okay, so the Malbim has really, I think he's formulated his argument well. Again, you don't have to accept it, you can be on the side of the Abarbanel that he actually sinned, but I think the whole thing is very uncomfortable, and it creates a lot of problems to say he sinned. It creates a lot of problems to try to excuse it in this way. But even in Malbim's attempt to say he didn't sin with adultery or with manslaughter, Malbim is still saying that David's entire thought process in how to deal with his actions was really unbefitting for the king and for the ancestor of Mashiach, the descendant of Yaakov. So the Malbim is not totally letting him off the hook. He can't. The psukim are there, that God is angry with him. But we're going to see, as Deborah pointed out earlier, the beauty of David's tshuva and his immediate tshuva and taking responsibility for his actions and accepting all the future horrific events that will occur to him as a result of these actions. Okay.
I think you've got two potential sins here.
Yeah?
I think one of them is his intention all along.
Right, exactly.
That's the sin that Hashem notices.
Yeah.
I think you got another problem, because he's held to a higher standard, and unless you really dig really deep like we're doing now, it smells.
Right.
The public.
Right.
You got a real issue of what it really looks like.
Exactly.
Especially someone like Yoav, who sees him, tells him, put him in the front line,
right,
and then he marries his wife.
Right, exactly. And that was what was evil in the eyes of God.
Right.
Not the other things that seem to be evil to us, which, if they came out in the open, you can imagine how David would no longer be able to rule, as the Malbim also pointed out. So yeah, exactly. And the Malbim also, in all his defenses of David, is willing to say something smells, right? Like, this is not appropriate behavior. But again, when we read the next parak and we read David's reaction, this is what's going to let us admire him even more. His admitting and taking responsibility. Okay, anything else? Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's why we were.